Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan. The commissioner of Mundri County says frequent attacks on the Juba-Mundri road is discouraging farmers from harvesting their crops.
Everybody is holding gun in their hand, so I wouldn't know which group is this that is attacking.
And victims of abuses in Sudan are threatening to take their case to the international court.
These cases have long root causes in the past, beginning from genocide in Darfur, among others. These cases cannot be resolved when the structure of the government is not complete.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The commissioner of Mundri East County in Western Equatoria State says frequent attacks on vehicles along the Juba-Mundri Road has caused panic among farmers in the area. Margaret Fozia Emmanuel says unidentified gunmen attacked commercial vehicles on the Juba-Mundri Road this week, killing civilians. She says the attackers instilled fear in farmers who were expecting a good harvest this year.
What happened on Sunday was there are three young men coming from Juba on motorcycle. They were going to Yambio because their father is sick and their elder brother is the Bishop Samuel Penny. So their vehicle was banned on the road between Lanyi and Boji. So, and then the vehicle was banned and there was no anybody and the three people disappeared. They were not known. Their whereabouts is not known up to today. So then later on, because the report came to the SSPDF that there is a motorcycle banned on the road. So they went to check on this motorcycle, which was banned, and then they were attacked. That was the first attack.
Who are behind the attacks?
Sincerely speaking, I wouldn't know anybody because there is no trace of them, and also there is no any person who is captured, maybe to give information that this person, we are a group of these people. So there was nobody who was captured or who was wounded, found maybe down and to be questioned. So there is nobody who is to give us clearly who are these attackers.
Being the commissioner, you are also the head of the security committee. How come you are not aware about the identity of the attackers?
I wouldn't know because South Sudan, everybody is holding gun in their hand. So I wouldn't know which group is this that is attacking. As I said, if there was a person who was maybe captured by the SSPDF and investigated, I would know this group belongs to this person, this group belongs to this group. But from the search, there was nobody who was to give clear information this person is. What I know is I only know that SSPDF was attacked. But the group who attacked SSPDF, I don't know them.
Talk to me about security on the Juba-Mundri Road. Are vehicles moving on this road?
Yeah, the vehicles are moving. As I was about to be talking to you, on Tuesday morning also there was attack on police at the roadblock, and also these attackers went and marched up to the SSPDF the commando place, but unfortunately, also they were repelled and then they left. The next one is also on Lanyi SSPDF. So as I was telling you, sincerely speaking, I wouldn't know who are this group, and I wish one of them is captured to be able to tell me who they are. And if I know who they are, I think I will engage them in a dialogue, at least to know the problem they are having and holding arms against civilians or against or the people of Mundri East. But generally, I can assure you, since June, the road was very safe. Everybody was moving on this road very safely, except these two incidents which took place on Sunday and on Tuesday. So this is what has made the people a bit scared. Yesterday evening, the civilian vehicle coming from Juba. Also, there was a shooting, random shooting on the civilian.
How big is the size of the South Sudan Army in the area?
Well, I wouldn't be able to know how big is the force. What I know is I know that there is a forces of SSPDF, but I do not count their number because their parade should be with their leaders of the SSPDF.
Why are vehicles being attacked when you have the army stationed along the roads?
I bet you know that the SSPDF are there, and whoever who has a gun in their hands and they're doing what they are doing. What else can the SSPDF do when the SS, and when these attacks? I wish they are informing the SSPDF that tomorrow we shall be attacking here on the road, so the SSPDF can patrol. But I can assure you, the SSPDF does patrol on the road. That is why people even don't fear to move. That's why the vehicles also come, because the SSPDF does patrol to take care of the people on the road.
What is the impact of this attack on the population in the area?
The people of Mundu East are very sad. And I wish the people who are attacking, know the feelings of the people of Mundu East. Because I can assure you, the people of Mundu East have done a lot of harming. What they want now is to enjoy this relative peace, so that they are able to harvest their groundnuts, their sesame, their maize, their cassava, and their sorghum. But unfortunately, this opportunity is not given to them. Once there is attack on the road, everybody is scared because they don't know what might conspire the next day. So this really makes the life of people of Mundu East very miserable. And I wish the gun holders would think about the people of Mundu East and people of Western Equatoria, that enough is enough. And guns can never solve any problem unless there is a sitting on the round table to discuss issues that affect individuals and even the people who are holding guns.
That's Margaret Fozia Emmanuel, the commissioner of Mundu East County. She was speaking with me from Kadebi in Western Equatoria State. Food insecurity is rising in many countries in Africa. New research by Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington shows that while climate change is a factor, it is not the major cause of food insecurity on the continent. Wendy Williams is an associate research fellow at the center, and she spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson about the latest study.
Right now, the largest driver of food security in Africa is conflict-related. Conflict is the primary driver of acute food insecurity in Africa, which is imperiling over 100 million people's lives.
Has that number gone up significantly in the past few years?
Well, it's doubled since 2018. So it's definitely trending upward. And most of this is all related to conflict, which these are protracted conflicts. They've been going on for no less than 4 years. If you consider that the 15 countries with the highest levels of food insecurity right now, 12 of them are experiencing conflict. And the one with the least amount of time in conflict has been Mozambique, which is 4 years. The rest are for, over a decade or longer, like the DRC or Sudan, Somalia, and Nigeria.
Is the food insecurity situation in conflict zones because food is being used as a weapon of war, or is it because people are afraid to go into their fields to farm because aid workers don't have access?
It's more of the latter. Conflict, it distracts governments and draws away resources, right? The governments are focused on the conflict at hand, which in the case of Africa only adds to the fragility of the institutions and the infrastructure that exists, and the government's ability to provide public services and assistance. And so that's what's causing a lot of the food insecurity. And also the conflict, as you noted, it uproots people, which prevents them from going back into their fields to harvest or to plant. There are about 31 million people in Africa who have been forcibly displaced from their homes due to the conflict. And those people include farmers, pastoralists, fishers, merchants, traders. This translates into substantial losses in planting, harvesting, transportation of food, and the functioning of markets.
Now, I'd sort of like to flip that thought about, if I may. Mm-hmm. In countries that are peaceful but are experiencing food insecurity for other reasons, for instance, economic collapse, climate change issues, that sort of thing, does food insecurity increase the risk of conflict?
So this has been debated a lot among experts. And food insecurity itself doesn't create conflict. You see lots of places where people have been experiencing drought or poor harvests, and they don't immediately get into conflict. But it has been identified as an amplifier or a threat multiplier to existing conflicts or existing what would be a good example or way to describe
fragilities
it?
Tensions?
Exactly, tensions between various groups. You know, a common discussion is the problem of climate change, where you have shortened raining periods, so people are, the farmers go out to their harvest, and they've already had an arrangement with pastoralists who typically, under the good conditions, farmers would harvest their crops and the pastoralists would bring their herds back into the emptied fields to feed on the leftovers. And it's sort of a good arrangement. But what happens when harvests come later and the pastoralists have to bring their herds back in from wandering, because they also don't have water or any vegetation out there, and they come back at the same time that the harvests are, you know, at their peak, but they haven't been brought in by the farmers, then you have these situations where that could lead to conflict. So it's more of an exacerbation, the climate change for any sort of tensions that possibly could exist.
That was Wendy William with the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington. She was speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson. Communities in Obira Village in eastern Equatorial State say the recent killing of a youth leader in Obira Village by armed young men believed to have come from Budi County could spark revenge killings in the area. A member of Obira community says eastern Equatorial State authorities should deploy police in the area to defuse a looming conflict. Alam William says if no action is taken by the state authorities, young men from Obira might take the law into their hands.
On Wednesday, a group of youth from Buya community came and attacked our people in the gardens. That was at 5 p.m. when people were leaving their farms home. So they came and attacked our people. And then one of the community leader was shot dead.
It takes two to fight. Why are you blaming one group?
Well, they did not fight. They only came and attacked people when they were in the garden. When they were in the garden, so it was around 5 p.m. So when they were leaving the gardens, going homes now, so they came under attack by this element from the Buya community.
Eastern Equatoria has a lot of small arms in the hands of civilians. Why are you singling out one group to have started the fighting?
Well, because I didn't blame them. I blame them in a sense that because they came and they attacked our people. So our people never went and attacked them. That is the issue.
Can you tell us what happened exactly?
Of course, the youth are not happy. And they are currently mourning the death of the youth leader. And our fear is that they might also, you know, mobilize themselves to go and for revenge killing. This is something that we don't want. You know, that's why we are calling upon our state government to intervene so that our youth are encouraged not to go but they should allow the government of the state to pursue the perpetrators until they are brought to books.
What are you doing to stop the youth from engaging in a revenge attack?
Of course, our role here as youth, we always depend on the support of the government, because we cannot take law into our hands. We normally, because we have the leaders, the youth leaders, and we have also the local government which are run by the local chiefs. So normally we listen from them. So now we have, been waiting that nobody should take law into his hands. We should wait for until the government of the state intervene, and we see what the outcomes is going to be.
What have you done to inform the state government about this situation, and what kind of intervention are you expecting from the state government?
Well, this is the jurisdiction under the head chiefs. So it is the head chief whose role is to inform the office of the governor and the relevant authority, so that they came into picture of this.
What is the evidence or proof that the attackers are from Budi County?
Of course, in that very evening, people followed their footmark, but they were caught up by night. So in the following morning, our youth resumed following the footmark until after the territory of Budi County. So this is a clear indication that these people come from a Budi community, particularly from the Buya community.
Many people in South Sudan are armed. Why are you accusing young people from Budi County?
We are coexisting together with other neighboring communities, so we don't suspect them. They don't have a problem with us totally. And even when our youth followed the footmark of the perpetrators, so they entered the Budi County. So we cannot throw blame on other community that they are coming to come and maybe attack us, because we have grudges with them. We have no grudges with any community at all, including even the Buya community.
Have you made your concerns to the authorities in Budi County about this attack?
That is why I said earlier that this is the role of the head chiefs with the relevant authority of the county. So they will be there to exercise this mandate, so that the other side also they are informed. I'm quite sure by this time they might have been informed.
What are your next course of action?
Of course, currently we are waiting for the reaction of the state government to intervene into this case, because our role as Munyomiji youth, we don't always fight anyhow. We are always under self defense, and we cannot be tempted by any group to launch attacks on us just without any problem. So we always on self defense, and we are always coexisting together with other communities. We don't have any grudges with any community at this moment.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some of the Sudanese injured during protests that led to the oust of former President Omar al-Bashir say the perpetrators of the abuses should be prosecuted in a court of law. The activists are threatening to take their case to an international court should Sudan fail to take action. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Tens of thousands of supporters of the mainstream Forces for Freedom and Change coalition took to the streets of Khartoum yesterday to demand the country transition to democratic rule enshrined in the constitution. Similar protests took place in the capitals of all Sudan's 18 states. Some of the people who were injured during Sudan's huge pro-democracy revolution in 2019 used yesterday's protest to remind the transitional government that no one has been tried for the abuses committed more than 3 years ago. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus during Thursday's protest in Khartoum, Muhammad Mustafa, who was shot once in the chest and again on his right hand on June 3, 2019, said he and many others injured during the revolution have received no compensation from the government. Mustafa says if the government fails to carry out justice, he and other Sudanese citizens who were abused or wounded during the 2019 revolution will take their case to an international court.
It has been 3 years now, and we don't know where to go to get the truth or to whom to go to seek justice and in which court. We don't know. So we want this case to be handled by an international investigative committee. This is the demand of all the victims.
A report by Human Rights Watch said that in the early hours of June 3, 2019, Sudanese security forces surrounded protesters in front of the military headquarters in Khartoum and violently dispersed the protests by firing live ammunition directly at protesters, killing and wounding scores and subjecting many more to harsh beatings, rape, sexual assault, humiliation, and other abuses. Protester Sadiq Fatah Rahman says he was shot on the leg on April 9, 2019, then detained by Sudanese security forces in Khartoum for nearly 4 months. He says he was subjected to beatings, torture, and even developed bleeding in the brain and became paralyzed from the waist down. Speaking while seated in his wheelchair, Fatah Rahman says he has lost hope in the national judiciary system because none of the perpetrators have been either identified or prosecuted in a court of law.
These cases have long root causes in the past, beginning from genocide in Darfur, among others. These cases cannot be resolved when the structure of the government is not complete. They are supposed to establish different commissions and a legislative council. All these institutions, if they are established, then they will help give access to justice.
Another protester, Rasha Jokes, who was shot in the foot on April 7, 2019, in Omdurman, says she and other citizens took part in yesterday's protest to show their solidarity with the family of victims who were killed during the revolution and to show their support for a full transition to a democratic rule in Sudan. Jokes says the people will not allow the military to rule Sudan again because the last 3 decades under the autocratic rule of Bashir were, in her words, the worst experience in the history of Sudan's government.
We came to fully support the civilian rule because many victims have paid for it. So it is impossible that we render this achievement to the military. We are ready to go on the streets every day until a full democratic civilian rule is realized.
Hala Al-Karbi, who heads the Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa, a local NGO that advocates for women's rights, condemned what he calls a serious attempt by the military to divide the civilian leaders in the government against each other. She says the military component is trying to use the current economic challenges to gain confidence of the Sudanese so that they can continue ruling the country. Al-Karbi says, despite these challenges, Sudanese will continue to demand a democratic civilian-led government.
They are proven over and over that they are in the driving, in the driver's seat, you know, when it comes to the country's futures, despite the fact that they keep being challenged, you know, by those who are trying to obstruct, you know, the opportunities of the country for peaceful and democratic transition.
Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok formed an investigative committee in July 2019, headed by lawyer Najib Adib, to investigate the circumstances around the deadly crackdown on peaceful protesters at military headquarters in Khartoum. The committee has yet to present its findings. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
We love to hear what you think about issues in our news. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comment. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. The comments we received this week were wide-ranging, although several of you discussed the issue of security arrangements and various South Sudanese troops in training centers, such as Mading Malual Alwong from Malakal Town, who writes, "Our government should prioritize security sector reform and really invest huge resources on implementing security arrangements in the peace agreement. There are reports that forces are leaving training camps or training centers due to a lack of basic services in the camps, such as food and medicine. This will also pose huge threats in the future." Diane Deng Bol in Wau says, "Hello Nabil Biagio and John Tanza. I welcome the decision of the government to graduate Joint Unified Forces, which is a key for the peace implementation process. We need South Sudan, being the most important country for young people, to enjoy all rights and freedom of speech as well as the fruits of being an independent nation." Mal Adao Mal in Bortown writes, "Hello VOA. Please allow me to convey my condolences to the aggrieved family of late Colin Powell. He was indeed instrumental during the signing of the CPA, which later paved the way for South Sudan independence. As he said in his speech, any conflict can be resolved, and that's exactly what our leaders should do as we head for graduation of joint forces for One South Sudan. And Saber Isaac Khamis from Entebbe, Uganda says, Hi VOA South Sudan in Focus. Late is better than never. It is a positive move to hear that soon the unified forces will be graduating and deployed as per the security arrangement speculated in Chapter 2 in the peace agreement. We South Sudanese lose hope for our nation because Kiir, Machar, Makwe and all the top South Sudanese officials own the nation to be theirs, and they think citizens are to be their chicken anytime they can slaughter. Gwet Kwang Mabiel from Lair County Unity State says, Dear South Sudan in Focus, a group of MTN users in Ye and I are disgruntled by the MTN's business behavior towards its clientele in this country. When one buys internet bundles for so much hard-earned money, within seconds this is followed by a message announcing you have used your bundles, please buy another. This is open-day robbery. Besides this, MTN charges are abnormally high. They are cheating the public and nobody seems to care about this exploitation. It seems MTN is punishing the public for the damage of its equipment in Central Equatorial State. But that's not our fault. So they must lower their rates or else we will boycott their products for good. Martin Manuel Wugol in Gulu says, The ongoing protest in Sudan needs an urgent political solution. If not, military men will take over the leadership from politicians and that will mark the end of democracy in Sudan. Stephen Musema Julius Ilia from Yumbe says, Good evening, John Tanza and the whole team. The issue that caught my attention is the South Sudan leader who is representing South Sudan in the East African community who is failing to attend the council meetings, which is a clear indication that he is not competent to be in that post. Samuel Remo in Yei says, Hi John Tanza and Nabil. The banning of Bangui by Honorable Commissioner and Commander of Army Garrison of Yei River County is welcome. This will reduce crime caused by the influence of Bangui in the county and can also stop massive production of Bangui by local growers in rural areas. And finally, Daniel Dud Dagbai from Ragmajok Lake State says, Whenever all political parties in South Sudan come to the consensus of implementing the revitalized peace agreement, there are peace spoilers that sabotage the progress and cooperation. Warap State Governor Aleu Ayen is a military man. Putting on military uniform is not a threat to the SPLM-IO members in Warap. Aleu Ayen is a man of peace and unity. His coming to the state gives lasting peace to the people of Warap and neighboring states. Leave him alone. He is a man of his own kind. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of this program or of VOA. We appreciate hearing from so many of you. Keep those comments coming.
That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with the song Blessed by Eddie Kenzo.
Babarambara maramba sinze nsibweba Sancho ngede wakumachanga nesuba nku Ngoko yokumachaye koko denteme Manyi kamu kama wake dendaba Bizibu vyanse no twe tusema bipa I feel blessed. Oh yeah. I feel blessed.
We've been listening to Eddie Kenzo and the song Blessed. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I feel blessed. Oh yeah.